Hi, my name is Mo, and if you don't know me, I'm the host and interlocutor of this podcast you're listening to called the Most Well Podcast. I'm also an associate professor in the College of Medicine, a scientist, cancer researcher, and also a mother. My journey to motherhood wasn't easy. It was one paved with tears and doubts. My path was not conventional either, but I'm proud of it. It is what it is. I welcomed my second child last year through surrogacy, and I believe that surrogacy is widely misunderstood, but that needs to change, don't you think? If you're unfamiliar with the term, surrogacy is a method of assisted reproduction where a woman called a surrogate carries and gives birth to a child for someone else, often referred to as the intended parents or community parents. Surrogacy is a very personal journey, but I'm sharing this for two reasons. One, because stories matter, representation matters, and also because I want someone out there to know that they are not alone in their struggle, that they shouldn't feel less than because this is a path that is tenable to them. So this month, I'm doing what this podcast does best, having real, honest conversations. In 5 episodes, I sit down with key people in this journey, medical professionals, surrogate mothers, intended parents, and legal experts. Together, we untangle the complex, emotional, and deeply human journey of surrogacy. So whether you're considering surrogacy, navigating infertility, supporting someone on this path, or just want to learn, come along for the ride. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome back, everyone, to the Most Well Podcast. Today, I don't even know what the tone is going to be by the end of this episode. It's an episode that I have been wanting to do for a very long time. But as with things in life, you have to wait until the right season. And I believe strongly that today is just the right time for this kind of conversation. As some of you may know, if you've been following the podcast for a while, the topic of fertility is very close to my heart, given the trials and triumphs of our personal journey. So joining me in the studio today are 3 wonderful people. When I say they have changed my life, I don't mean towards that. I'm always careful when I say things like that. But you understand why these people are phenomenal, because if you've been doing things a certain way and you realize that there's a need to change and you cry out for help, to have people that genuinely just want to walk the walk with you, given how murky and how lonely and how difficult this journey can be, that they literally take your hand and they take your matters on their head. These are the people I'm talking about. So joining me today is, in no particular order of importance, first person I'm calling is Chinima. She's a registered midwife. She specializes in fertility and assisted reproductive treatment. She's deeply passionate about helping people. And I say that because I have been one of the recipients. She's passionate about helping people realize their dreams of expanding their families and ensuring that the journey is as seamless as possible. Her care not only extends to her clients, but also to the incredible individuals or angels, as she calls them. So these are people that donate their eggs and even surrogates who help make these dreams a reality. Other person I'd like to introduce you all is Busolami. She's a fertility nurse. She provides coaching and support to patients navigating infertility and undergoing assisted reproduction treatment. She's committed to promoting equality and ethical practices in assisted reproduction, especially in developing countries in Africa. Last but not the least is my husband, T-Dog. He's not a stranger to the podcast. We've been married for 14 years coming in June. And people that are not mentioning today that are pivotal to this story, shout out to our mommy Tammy Oshawa. She works behind the scenes, but she made all these connections happen. One day she just comes, she's like, Tolani, this is your issue of having, I want to introduce somebody that you already know, but please talk to her. Let her help you out. And the rest, as I say, is history. So welcome, Chinima. Welcome, Busolami, and hi, T-Dog.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the show.
All right. So to even get us started, we know that in Africa, for example, which has many countries, so people listen to this, Africa is not just a country, it's a continent, right? Women facing fertility challenges, even couples facing it, usually the woman is seen as the culprit or the one, that's causing the problem. And because of that, there's a lot of additional emotional, social, and psychological trauma due to that cultural value placed on a woman's ability to bear children. And as time goes on, we're seeing that surrogacy is becoming as open as it's becoming more open in our societies, like in African countries, we're also seeing controversies, you know, arising in it. I think it was Nancy Umeh recently who came out boldly to talk about her experience with surrogacy. So if you haven't watched that Instagram thing that she did, I highly recommend to do that. What we're going to be doing now is just to supplement that story and talk about our own experience, right? We know that it's still a controversial topic, but there are also limited research available. So I would like to add to that conversation the research part of it, the laws behind it, the policies, with the hope to strengthen families who are trying to conceive, but also advocate strongly for surrogates. Now, most people are not comfortable discussing this openly. As a matter of fact, I have some family members that looked at me when they heard I was going to do a podcast about it, and they gave me some caveat about things I'm not supposed to talk about. Looking at you, Mom. But, you know, our podcast is all about exploring these unspoken topics. I have never held back about talking about things that are very private to me, because I feel like this is where I get my liberation from. It might sound very selfish, but I strongly believe in sharing these testimonies so can help people as well. So in the hopes of fostering these meaningful connections, we are unpacking a lot of boxes today. Now, a recent development in our life has brought the topic of surrogacy into sharp focus. For those that are hearing for the first time, we had a baby in November, which I haven't, you know, made public announcement about. I'm still leaning into this parenthood the second time around through a different pathway. We pursued surrogacy the second time and it finally worked. So we're having this in-depth conversation, the good, the bad, and everything in between. Now, before we move into the questions, it's good to establish some stats of surrogacy in Nigeria. And I know people are saying, stop talking, but let's talk about, you know, just some stats. So for those that are not aware, surrogacy is a third-party assisted reproductive treatment involving a woman who's a surrogate who consents to carrying a pregnancy on behalf of an individual or couple unable to conceive due to a myriad of reasons, maybe medical reasons. Now, in Nigeria, it's gaining popularity, especially among couples, partly because it offers a more straightforward path to parenthood compared to adoption. It's actually very hard to adopt in Nigeria. Tell me why I know that. Now, however, the lack of clear legal provisions on surrogacy in Nigeria has created gaps to allow for potential abuse and highlight the need for policy recommendations to really help establish a legal framework protecting all stakeholders in surrogacy agreements, especially the surrogates. Now, countries adopt different kinds of approaches to surrogates. For example, Germany and France, they completely prohibit the practice. But countries like the UK and Canada, they permit surrogacy but restrict it to altruistic arrangements. They disallow any form of monies being exchanged. Now, certain nations, specifically the US and in some states, like in my state, Oklahoma, we don't have very strong laws for surrogacy. So they borrow that from Texas, which is like a contiguous state. Even though the US is considered surrogacy friendly, it's, you know, it's very expensive. You're looking at least $400,000 to $500,000. Now, for countries like ours, Nigeria, they lack clear regulations on surrogacy, which again leaves this practice to operate in legal gray area. The way I can explain the model that currently runs in surrogacy right now is the house help or model, where there's an agent involved and they pay the agent, and the agent, if they are very merciful, they can pass on the bulk of that money to the surrogate. But we see a lot of abuse that goes on. The surrogates are not fed well, they don't have, you know, support. And imagine someone carrying your child and the implication of that ethically, spiritually, psychologically. Now, in the absence of these federal laws, some fertility clinics in Nigeria have adopted international guidelines such as UK's Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority, which is the HEFA. HFEA guidelines to govern their operations. Now, over the years, various bills have actually been proposed, such as the Assisted Reproductive Technology Regulation Bill and the Surrogacy Bill of 2024, both of which aim to establish enforceable surrogacy agreements in Nigeria. Unfortunately, these bills have not been enacted into law. So because of that, you know, again, it's created a vacuum. So in Nigeria right now, surrogacy is almost like, and I hate to say this because I was a recipient of it, it's a classic game. It's a game where you have the middle class and the upper class who can afford it, and people who serve as the surrogates are the ones that really need it, who are desperate for money, and that desperation is, you know, tapped into. So we're going to go into that. But first, I would like to ask my two nurses and midwife, can you give us a little bit of a background into your profession and what really would you say inspired you to follow this path into nursing and midwifery? Starting with Bosolami, and then I will ask Chidimma next.
thank you very much, Alani, for the introduction and for just setting the pace and for having to talk about this, because everybody does the hush-hush thing about surrogacy and assisted reproduction, and then I think Nancy just blew it up onto the world. Yeah, so I was thinking about that. So how did I get myself into nursing? It was just as a teenager, I met older nurses who were really impactful. I mean, they would speak to you and you would just listen. I felt they were very influential, even though they were not known. And then that just took my interest, and that feeling just wouldn't leave me. It made me change my path. In my secondary school, I had to wait an extra year at home because I wanted to take my path. And hula, and I got in, even after many rigorous training. How did I get myself into fertility nursing? It took me about 3 months to make that decision. Eventually, I did. And just got a job and just saw what they were doing. And I loved it. I just loved it. And that's been my story so far.
So if you hadn't met those elder nurses, what would you have done? What was your path going to be before you forged into nursing?
Yeah, I love my dad so much. So I was going to be, I wanted to be an accountant. So I was in the secondary school, I was in the commercial class, just doing accounting, all of those things.
Wow.
And when that wouldn't leave me, and when I finished my secondary school, I got all my papers, everything was good. So I had to go back to take tutorials on physics and chemistry for a whole year.
Wow.
And I had to take the white exam again.
Wow.
And I passed it. And I was like, God, okay, this is a miracle. You really want me here? And that was my story, actually, about getting here. And it's been a journey, and it's been the best journey. I've never had to regret that. Why did I do this? No, I've never had to do that for one day. It's been a very rewarding journey for me so far.
Imagine you as an accountant. Interested to know. Thank you for sharing that. Chidinma, how about you?
Okay, so thinking back now, I remember that as a child, I used to admire a nurse. I remember she had a red car and she had a sticker on the car, nurses are angels. You know, and I've not really thought about this. I just remembered now that I used to wait for her. She would always drive past my house at around 7:30, 7:35-ish. So I'll wait outside and watch her drive. Very neat looking good on a white, had a stethoscope in front of her, you know. So I always wanted to look at her. And when she passes, I can now start going to school. But I wouldn't say that was what really made me delve into nursing or even refereeing. I would say that I stumbled on it, you know. After secondary school, a friend of mine got an admission into School of Midwifery, the same School of Midwifery I graduated from. And, you know, one of those days she just came back and she was talking about school and everything. And I just said, I would like to be in a place like this. And that was how I just thought about, okay, I could ask her for when the forms are out and all that, and, you know, getting the form and all that. But for me, it wasn't very, the midwifery study, straight midwifery study wasn't very, wasn't very common at the time, you know. I was going into it without even knowing what it actually meant. I just felt that it was a path to get into what I wanted. But I got into it. I got into school, met professional colleagues, older professional colleagues, and I really was interested in the practice. You know, that's what got me into reading midwifery, studying midwifery. And after that, on the job, I just knew that getting into the fertility practice, I knew that I wanted more after I had worked as a midwife in general practice for like 4 years. Yeah, 3 to 4 years, you know. I met very wonderful people, but I met a particular patient when I was working in the labor ward and who had conceived through the IVF process, you know. And I remember that on her folder was written, precious babies, something like that. So I got interested. I wanted to know how she got to that point, you know, what she had to do and everything, and interactions with her. after her delivery, you know, she kept talking about how it had been a journey, you know, how what she had gone through and everything. And I just felt okay, I'm interested.
Mm. Wow. I think for both of you, the commonality in your responses, the people you saw, and the almost like people that served as mentors or models for you to get into that path. And it just makes me wonder, people that are actually watching you right now, maybe listening to this story and getting all inspired that, okay, I had a thought about nursing, but after hearing this episode, I think I'm going to pursue nursing and maybe even pursue, you know, fertility nursing. So I'm just saying that it's funny how we just, we get inspired, and with that inspiration, we inspire others. So, yeah. Just so you know, someone might share this in the future and be like, oh, I listened to that episode and it made me want to go study nursing. So let's talk about just, let's segue the conversation a little bit into, we just lost Chidima. Hopefully she's able to join back again. With Musola, we can ask, so given that you've practiced in the US, sorry, in the UK and in Nigeria, having those two perspectives, how would you say, and I know you've also done a lot of research and you're a very strong advocate for surrogates especially. Can you just give us, in your opinion, expert opinion, what you think about the current state of surrogacy in Nigeria especially, and contrasting that to what you may have observed in the UK?
Okay, thank you. Definitely the landscape is not the same. I mean, HFE has gone far, they do their things. But in Nigeria, like you already rightly mentioned, there's a lot of social class issues, you know, the rich versus the poor, that's happening. You know, people are beginning to monetize their body parts, which is a problem, which is a social problem. It's a real problem. I'm not sure we are seeing that happen yet, but it's a real problem, you know, and the regulations are the problem, where it's not into law. The people don't see it as something that they need to address until it becomes maybe an epidemic and it affects them. So that's where, because of the regulations and the judiciary system and the rule of law is not as strong in Nigeria, so that gives us a bit of weak hand, because the law is usually not executed to the latter in Nigeria. But in the UK, it's quite different. Surrogacy is before you can do that, even you will have gone through a lot of journey. It's not all clinics that offer that, you know, and they see the surrogate as a recipient and they see the commissioning parents with their gamete as a donor. So they have to screen, make sure there is nothing that would jeopardize the health of the surrogate, you know, and the surrogate is they do it for altruistic reasons. They don't have to get paid. I mean, they don't even get paid for the service, but they get, of course, transportation and cost of the things surrounding it. Right. So, and they get to, because they know that that's the law, everybody goes to the portal where they get to see what legislations, and they know. So nobody's coming to the table having to be told what to do. They already know the grounds of operations, and they know what their responsibilities are. And they are very, very clear. It's a country where they're highly informed. So you can't compare the information they have and the information that we have back in Nigeria. In Nigeria, the surrogates don't think about the implications. They don't think about that they might actually die. They can actually die from childbirth. They don't think about that. They don't think about the fact that their body can have some disease conditions, not like morbidity in that sense, that they'll have to deal for the rest of their lives. They have no idea of the psychological experience it will give them afterwards. Yeah. They don't think about the aftermath. They just want the gratification, you know. And when I meet the surrogates I've met, I just tell, even the donors I've met, I've told them, nobody can pay you for what you're doing. That's it. Nobody can pay you enough for what you're doing. So you need to put yourself in that place that you cannot be paid enough. So you have to understand that you really are doing this thing in quotes at your risk. And then I really find it very uncomfortable when people do not look after their surrogates well. I don't know how to think about those kind of people. But because they don't understand, and no law owes them to ransom, nobody holds you responsible for your decisions or for what you choose to make. So, I mean, first of information, and second is having to make the surrogate understand their responsibilities and the aftermath and what they may likely experience, which they're not even thinking about at all. Even though they are being told they probably they don't they have selective hearing. They don't even listen. They just want what they want.
I think I also think there's comprehension, right? Because like you said, it's a social class game, you know, where the surrogates tend to be those that have, you know, lower socioeconomic status, lower education levels, who might be desperate to, they need the money. You know, they need the money. And that desperation is what it's fed into. So what they're just saying is, oh, I'm going to get this money at the end of the day. But if it calculates all the losses they have as far as the psychological toll, emotional toll, it's like, are you really making money out of it? You know?
Just to add, I mean, I've met surrogates where they've carried pregnancies and they're back to square one afterwards. They don't have anything to show for it. And I'm like, what did you just do to your life? You know, you have to work. Were you encouraged into it? You chose to do it. But I mean, what did you bring out of it? The families have gone forever, you know. And the kind of surrogacy that is being done in the United Kingdom is a non-anonymous surrogacy. You must be non-anonymous. Imagine. You must have a relationship with your surrogate.
Because money is not being
there's anonymous surrogacy back in Nigeria, and you know that changes the game.
It really
changes the game entirely. So it is anonymous. You know, it's just that just a fake exploitation, from the surrogate or from the commissioning couple. So I mean, there's still a lot of work to be done. I believe that the Association of Reproductive Health in Nigeria are already doing some work. They are doing really intense work, but it's just not been enacted into law. And I know some in the time moving forward, the world is becoming global, and they would have to do it. Yeah, it's becoming global. I mean, what's becoming global? The times are going to come. It's not long enough anymore. They're going to be asking for records, asking for details, and they could be sanctioned from exporting and bringing in gametes into different countries. And then we have to do what we have to do at that time. So I think the pace of information, we need to work on that as a country. And I know that the AFRH, I mean, the Association of Reproductive Health in Nigeria, is doing a lot of work. But it's just getting to law that's the issue, and executing the law when it's already in law, getting enacted is the problem.
Before I move to Tao real quick, I had a follow-up question for you. For those who might not be familiar with the surrogacy model, can you explain the role the agencies play and maybe put into narrow amounts, like scenarios, like, If the commissioning parents are paying for the surrogacy, this amount, how much ends up getting to the surrogates, you know, as far as percentage from your experience? So we can put things into perspective, really.
Well, there are different kinds of agencies, to be honest. So because surrogacy is a capital project, I will call it, anywhere in the world is expensive. Is expensive anywhere in the world. Of course, people want to go for the cheapest option, but you have a price to pay for that. So the more expensive it is, the more sophisticated, in quotes. Sophisticated, I mean to say, the surrogate is looked after, you have your legal things put in place, you know, they give you feedback, so you're kind of comfortable. But where it's cheaper, of course, the kind of surrogate you get at, in that sense, yes, they are good, they're okay, they're fine, they don't have any issues conditionally. I mean, they don't have any health issues. They will carry, but there's going to be issues here and there. So, for example, in Nigeria, the last time I checked, which is not too long ago, the commissioning couple could pay as much as, say, 10 million naira. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10 million, maybe 15 million thereabouts. But the surrogate doesn't get much. Probably we get up to, when you give surrogate about 2 million from 10 million. It's how many percent is that?
But it's not a lot. But the surrogate is the one getting all the, doing all the work, carrying the baby.
They would also calculate the feeding allowances, calculate transportation allowance, calculate housing allowance, which is never enough. You know, all of those things they calculate, and all the risks they're taking as well. And they have to keep their company rolling. They have to, I mean, it's just like you being an wholesaler and you are going to the customer. That's in between, and cost of production, cost of service, things like that. You know, and not just that, some of the surrogates always come to collect money in between because they have family to support. And by the time they get to the end of the 2 million, they've just deducted everything. Probably what is left is 500,000 or 200,000. you know, I had, it's so pathetic, really, really pathetic. They're always demanding for more because they may not have been so skilled to have a job of their own. They may have left where they're living, just a very uncomfortable situations like that, you know. So even the 10-15 million looks a bit expensive for some people because they may not be able to pay for that. Yeah, you know, and they may not be able to provide as much care as they should. Yeah. You know, but there's some very few people who would go extra mile to do the work to say, okay, it's not that a surrogate is being contracted through an agency, they will put a backup plan. This backup plan is to ensure that this surrogate is well looked after. Now, I do not know if any, for, I mean, as I speak right now, I don't know if any agency does therapies or they do mental health checks or they do a very thorough postnatal check for their surrogates afterwards, because they go through the 9 years of having to recover after pregnancy, which is not a joke.
And
she could be depressed.
Even like, you know, consultants.
And they don't have anyone to look after.
Go through that, but there's no baby to like compensate you for that. Oh, okay, at least I have a baby and let me nurse myself. There's no baby. It's like double.
Yeah, no, even if they know they don't have the baby, I mean, their brain is programmed that this thing inside of her is, doesn't belong to her. She's sure she knows that. That, okay, it's out. Yeah. I'm free. Yeah. But yes, you're free, but your body is saying you are free, but you are not free. You're still dealing with the aftermath of it. Like, you are healing from a wound. You are healing from being paused for a whole 38 to 40 weeks. And having to get them to recoil back, to get into the system again, get into their work. People start to ask them questions. People can tell if a woman just had a baby. You know, she's not going to change overnight.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, all of that, having to get herself ready, even financial management, how would her life come back on track? You know, having had a pause on it, it's just a lot to deal with.
I imagine that they
also women can
too. They might have their own kids too that they left and paused behind, you know, while they
were... Exactly. So it's that people can't even do. And of course, she's going to have to deal with stigma, deal with betrayal from those who know. Quite a lot, and she has no clue of what she's going to experience after.
Mm.
You know, not every agency knows that part.
Yeah,
and this is one of the things that we need to look after. I remember a surrogate told me that during the pregnancy, the parent was very lovely. That once she had the baby, they just disappeared. I laughed in that. I just encouraged her. You should not worry that, you know, they are busy. She said, I should not even like her anymore. And I'm like, what are you expecting?
Mm.
You know, did you think about who was going to look after you? But I understood where she was coming from. She probably got depressed. She wasn't looking good at all.
Mm.
What if she had a sepsis? Who's going to look after her? You know, many things. The morbidities are a lot. You know, so it's just an extensive look, in-depth one, you know. In having to go into the depth, and having to look after these people, because in my opinion they are the most important.
Yeah,
they are really the most important in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If you do not understand that part, or if we as well as populace do not understand that part, we would call and make them dig out and make them be very brutal, and then call for exploitation that we're not prepared for in later future. So it's good to avoid it. It's good to prevent it, you know, so that everybody has a very seamless process all through from beginning to end.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Before I go to Taiwo, I want to ask Chidima this question to kind of close the loop on this whole thought. So Chidima, I met Chidima through my doctor's office, and I was just drawn to her. So we came to inspect the facility, you know, to try doing IVF back home in Nigeria. And we had to bring Ari with us. And during one of my treatments, we had to put Ari somewhere. She was like, oh, no worry, I can hold your daughter for you while you, you know, go in and all that, which she didn't have to do. And I was like, oh, what a very sweet, you know, professional lady. And that was just it. So, Chinima, you've worked, you know, round the clock. You also work with, you know, egg donors, and you've seen surrogates. So as in a matter of disclosure, when we were pursuing surrogates a second time, we tried it last year, 2 years ago, 2023, and we lost our babies. We were expecting twins. We lost them at 14 weeks, which was very devastating. And we realized that there was a gap between us and the surrogates. We didn't really have anybody on ground. And so the plan was to get somebody that could serve as a surrogate to the surrogate, no pun intended. And this is where Chidima came in. And many thanks to Busola. I mean, we had a conference call, you know, we had agenda that we'll send out before time. We'll take minutes, we'll, you know, action plans. We had a WhatsApp group where we'll talk about it. It just felt like a project we're running, you know, and with data and, you know, checking on her, how she's doing, and the surrogates, you know, personally, professionally, development. Does she feel safe? What can we help with? Like anything that came up, we're just in constant communication. So for you, so since you've worked around the clock with the surrogate and, you know, the egg donors and all, what would you say are some of the challenges you see in surrogacy in Nigeria, and how can we begin to fill that gaps? And this question can be to the agents who help with the surrogates. It can also be directed to the surrogates who might be listening or would be surrogates, or even the commissioning parents who are current commissioning parents or would be commissioning parents. What are some of the gaps you see across board, Chidima?
Okay, thank you, Mo. I think on the part of the surrogates, the challenge, I would say, is most of them do not even understand what they are getting into. And they do not understand and do not think through the implication on them financially. They just look at it that, I'm going to get this money at the end of the entire process. And when they get into it, they find out, many of them, that maybe they are being underpaid or they are not being treated well, maybe because they are not structures to this yet, you know, and there are a lot of very gray areas that have not really been spelled out. I think that for me would be the challenge they face. So they get into it before they actually understand what they are getting into. And some of them, most of them, at the end of the process, like Bursola said, most of them become unhappy at the outcome, how their families react to it, how people around them see it. You know, I think generally there needs to be more education. To these surrogates, make them understand what they are going into. Yes, you're doing good, but there should be a lot of conversation with the agencies. And I think more proper agencies should come in. So that it's not just the agent or model thing, like you said. In fact, I never thought of it that way until today. You know, yes, when somebody just gets a help for you and then you pay the person. I think that most of them are being underpaid, like we have stated. Many of them are being underpaid, and then they also do not understand it. You know, just look at it and they say, I'm going to pay you, maybe, for example, at the end you would have 2 million, you know. And they just look at it and say 2 million is so big. We're forgetting the fact that this thing will be broken through your accommodation, transportation, and all that. And at the end of it, you do not have so much you're going home with. Like I had a conversation with Busola some days ago. You know, somebody was going home. She was leaving the hospital with just 650,000 naira. And when I went to walk her downstairs, she said she doesn't even know what to do with the money. You know, she had thought in her head that she was going to start up a business, you know, and all that. And with Nigeria of today, 650,000 could barely get her anywhere, you know. So she was already unhappy leaving the hospital. So I can imagine what somebody like that would go through in a couple of days. So it's like starting all over again. That's why some of them, they're calling you afterwards and like, until when again can I start? Another surrogacy process. Aww. Yes, some of them want to do it again because they entered into it because of money, and then they couldn't actualize that at the end of the project, and then they want to go back in again. Now, on the part of the agents, I have worked with some agencies. I wouldn't say that they're very structured, but from what from the discussion I had with about two of them last week, I found out that what they also get to work with is not a lot. And out of that, they want to also cut out, they want to have their own cut from it. So by the time the agent cuts and then has very little to give to the surrogate, what trickles down to the surrogate is small. So the, like one of them was telling me, he said, it's not really my fault. Chidma, when the clinic gives me this particular amount, I will take this and then give this to the surrogate. And I have to spread it through. Okay, money for accommodation and all that. And like we know, you know, we're trying to accommodation, getting accommodation. When somebody is being given from the plan, the person is giving like 300 to 350K for 1 year. And that can't even, that can't even get anything. So I think the challenge is not having proper agencies. That's one. And the girls not also understanding what they're going into. Going into before they even sign whatever documents. Yes, they sign documents, but many of them don't understand what they're signing.
I think one way to wrap up this episode when we get to that point is to talk about ways we can empower surrogates, and we can draw from your conversations. Now let's move to commissioning parents, T-Dog. You've been quiet for a while, so I'd like to hear from you. From your experience, given the other half of this dyadic relationship, what would you say, if you could put your experience into words, this whole surrogacy thing, for men like you, especially African, proud African men like you, what would you say this experience has been like for you? And what would you like would be commissioning parents that might want to give surrogacy a chance? What would you want them to know getting into it?
I kind of have this kind of unique perspective, right? You know, from having a background in the medical field, you know, then being a commissioning parent too. I remember while I was working before I came to the States, in 2010 maybe? You know, I remember even back then, you know, I didn't really know until, you know, after the fact that I was actually taking care of the surrogate, you know, and she had like a threatened abortion or something like that, you know. So it was just recently that it was now clicking. But anyway, I knew, you know, the whole process of surrogacy and all that, you know, that, you know, the usually it's done through an agency and the screen them, you know, for different things. I knew all the stuff that goes into it. But I think the main issue for me was, you know, just a lot of unknowns, like, okay, you know, just anxiety. Okay, how's this gonna go? Like, okay, is it going to be a positive pregnancy test? Okay, and then what next? Like just the fear of, you know, having had, you know, different, you know, losses previously, right? And you're, you know, anytime you hear anything, you're like already and see, you're already freaking out. You're like, oh my God, like, okay, is something wrong? You know, I remember always many times, you know, asking, you know, Chidima, who, you know, helped with our surrogate, you know, that, oh, how is the baby? And, you know, fetal movements, is she feeling fetal movements, things like that, you know? So just a lot of anxiety, worry, yeah, which I wouldn't say is outside the norm anyway, you know, but I'm not sure if I'm really answering your question, but I think one thing that really struck me was how really invested you were, you know, in...
Who are you?
You know, making sure that...
Me?
You.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, you.
Okay.
You were, you were in... You know, making sure that the surrogate was well taken care of, you know. You didn't want them to be exploited and all that. And especially after the incidents that occurred
the first one,
2 years ago now, you know, we felt like maybe we could have done more, you know. You know, given the whole financial, I didn't like that part too of, you know, people going into this, you know, with the hopes of I kind of turn it into a business, kind it of is, yeah. Like, okay, I'll carry a pregnancy and you pay me, you know. I didn't really like that, mm-hmm. you know, but
it's a lot.
That's why, yeah, we kind of tried to do the best that we could for the surrogate, yeah. you know. So, and at the same time, also, you know, not wanting to create a kind of, I'm not sure it's the right word now, like a dependent situation
yeah,
where
they exploit you. You know, they're,
yeah. So, yeah. yeah. So,
and I guess this is where people like Chidima and Masalami can help, because I remember the many times I would think of an idea and I would run to you guys and be like, what do you guys think about doing it? Oh, no, bad idea, but you can't do that, you know. How about we do it this way? Because, you know, in my head, it's like I always want to put the surrogate first, even though I know that there's an outcome that I want. I still want to put them first. I don't know if you remember, Ty, when we first went to do like a consultancy about surrogacy, I had so many questions for the doctor, and I concluded there and there that I was never going to put surrogacy because of the ethical issues. And he was very, very honest with me. He was like, they don't take care of them very well. Like, let him be very, very honest. But this is what they have to work with, unfortunately, because there are not laws protecting the surrogate. And I'm like, how can people just do this? It's like a violation of human rights. You don't care how they eat. You don't pay them enough. You don't think about their psychological health. And the more questions I was asking, the more I was going like, are you even sure you're this desperate to have a child? Because the way you're asking all those questions, it doesn't seem like that. So Tao mentioned the loss we had. We had a vacuum in communication between us and the surrogate. And it led to a costly mistake. And by the time we told Busolami, she was like, oh, they could have done this, they could have done that. And I just thank God how everything ended up working. So we employed the service of Chidima to serve as, again, the intermediary between us and the surrogate. And one thing that I really thank God for was just the wisdom of these women. Because, again, as people living abroad, there's a way you tend to think. And then they help you balance it, like, let's translate it into this. So one of the things that I wanted to do that was like bad idea, when the child was going to be born, and I'm like, can she even hold the baby for a little bit, like just a little bit, so that she can at least see that, like, no, you're not allowed to do that, because it's not going to be, on the long run, you know, psychological healthy for her. And so I had to step back, because that my plan was just, let her just hold the baby, like let her just see the baby that she helped, you know, carry. But there's some other things that we're very, very intentional about, which was therapy. You know, therapy was a big thing that we pushed for, and luckily we were able to get her therapy session before the birth and after the birth. And I'm not mentioning this so that everyone can think, oh, we're, you know, magnanimous, but I'm just talking to commissioning parents, especially those that already want to do, because if you are doing surrogacy in Nigeria, you have the means to do it. It doesn't take a lot to provide this extra support for your surrogate. As a matter of fact, I think it's the least we can do, you know. And not just during the pregnancy, but even after the pregnancy, because there's a lot of balance that they need to catch up on. And remember, they don't have the baby to even nurse or hold on to. And, you know, but the body keeps a score of all the trauma they've gone through. And talking about cesarean section, most of them end up doing cesarean section, which has a lot of, you know, complications, you know, pain and whatnot. You know, I haven't gone through that before, but I imagine there's a lot of pain and things they have to go through. And then making sure that she was good, you know, accommodation-wise. And we learned about her family dynamics, provided some form of support. I guess my next question for Chidima and Busolami will be this. How can we support surrogates, especially for the form? This is for the commissioning parents. Given just your experience in working with surrogates, if you were to help paint a picture of what it's like to be a surrogate, the help they need across board, you know, before the pregnancy, during the pregnancy, and post-pregnancy, what are some of the support commissioning parents can give to surrogates without, you know, being at the risk of being exploited, right? I think we can start with Chidima and then move to Salami. Thank you.
Okay. This is very... The commissioning parents helping out, you know, and supporting the surrogates, I would first of all advise that it is through a third party, because we don't want to put the commissioning parents in the face of the surrogate so that we're not having issues later on in the future. I think I would state that. like using a self-empathy like you did, I think that would go a long way. Then if we're a third party, I think the commissioning parent should insist on some level of education for the surrogates involved. I'm saying that because I think many of them, like I said earlier, do not understand what they are going into. So understanding that, oh, at this point, this is what you're doing, and this is likely going to be how you're going to feel after the entire process. And this is what you're going to do. This I think is what you're going to do. I think this is going to make a lot of sense, because many of them come out of it in regrets, like we said, you know, they're feeling that they didn't get enough and all that, they didn't meet their goal, you know, achieving financially what they wanted to achieve, you know. So I think a lot of education would be involved. And in our case in Nigeria, there's little the commissioning parents can do. Like you said, that you had a lot you wanted to do, you know. If you didn't have people you were going through it with to tell you, oh, I don't think we should do this. Okay, I think we should downplay this a bit. I think we should cut down on this. I think we should reduce on it. Okay, we can go ahead with this. If you didn't have people guiding you, most likely you would have made some mistakes. I don't know if I'm really answering your question. But I think that there should be a lot of guidance. Commissioning parents should work with third parties that would make things work, maybe in the clinic or maybe contracting people that would help do the work, you know. But I would also say that they should also have a heart to look out for the surrogate, because a lot of people just feel, okay, I have paid the money and I think everybody is sorted. At the end of it, really, they have paid and they will go back getting, they've gotten what they wanted, they've achieved their goal. But somebody is, somebody is not really happy. The person who, through whom the gift came, is really not happy at the end of the process. So I think looking out for the person and maybe asking questions, how they can help, because there are lots of people that actually do it. Some do it wrongly. Some don't have to go through people. Some people, they get themselves burnt in the entire process. So having to go through third parties that actually understand what you want to do for the surrogate and actually understand how to go about it, I think that would really help. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yes. Thank you so much. I mean, those are a lot of great nuggets you shared. So going through a third party who knows the lay of the land and making sure that while we're advocating for the surrogates, we're also avoiding the situations where the commissioning parents are being exploited. Thank you so much, Chidima. Bosola, is there anything you want to add to this?
I think Chidima said like 70% of everything.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to pick up from you having a heart for this person. I think if you look at most surrogacy processes, that it is just appalling, is that the commissioning couple are transactional.
Mm.
You just, I give you money, give me my baby. Mm. And that's, mm-mm, I think that's a high point of wickedness in life. Because you couldn't do something and someone is doing it for you. And that's one of the reasons why people do not, why is social surrogacy should not be allowed,
yeah,
from my opinion. Because with social, yeah, I pay you, get it, what I have to give my child. You know, it's just, you will never have a heart. But if you are put in a condition where you can't even do it yourself, there'll be a different approach to it, you know. But people are just on the extreme, which they're just very transactional because life has dealt with them, you know. And that's number one. Number two, there are two ways. If you want to have a surrogate that you want to have a relationship with, that person must be in your social class, because the person will likely think like you.
Mm-hmm.
Social class, you can communicate, you know. There won't be, if you are in different social classes, there's going to be a lot of clashes. I mean, and that is dated back to human socialization generally. So I'll just use the story from the Bible where, you know, Sarah had a surrogate in the house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because she knew she had a child, she was really misbehaving.
Mm-hmm.
And she, of course, she has to be sent out, which is a regular thing that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
you know, so, but if person's in the same social class, you would know how to relate. Mm-hmm. You know, the person would, but it is, it's not, it's rare. It can happen. It's just your sister can carry for you, and that's okay.
Mm.
You know, she can keep things within the family, that's fine. Mm. But there's different economic classes, in rich, poor. You need a middle person.
Mm.
So that you understand, the poor understands the language of the commissioning couple, the other understands how to reach out to the surrogates. That's number one. Number two is that you also need to make the surrogate know that you are supported. Like, before we start, number one, you're not alone.
Mm.
Number two, there's somebody holding your hand, walking you through this process. There's somebody you can talk to. Every woman needs that. Even as a woman regularly carrying a child, you want to have a midwife that you want to be seeing the same person every time, because you just want to feel a connection with the person that's walking you through the journey. Even if it's always the one there to birth your baby with you, you want to feel a connection. You brought my baby to birth. You walked me through this difficult process of delivery that I was just out of the world, and then you midwifed me into getting a child born. You know, that is very important. A support for any woman going through surrogacy is very key. That's why it's good to make it personal. Aside from the regular things, do it in extra. The extra would be the one to need. It won't cost you. It will save you a lot of hassle. And it doesn't cost much, trust me.
Okay.
It doesn't cost a lot. It's just the attitude and the heart that you have, you know, to making sure that she's supported. You know, having to communicate and know the extra needs that are not in paper.
Mm-hmm.
The extra needs that is peculiar to each and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You may not even know if your surrogate has mental illness issues. Nobody tells her mental illness.
No,
what if she gets pregnant and she becomes psychotic?
Right?
What would you do?
Yeah.
Your child is in that woman.
Yeah.
You can't run away.
You
got to walk through that journey with her. And it's the she even knows she's psychotic. There's nothing. What if she kills the child? You are stuck. And you also need a someone who is in the middle, who understand, you know, psychosis in pregnancy, and they can manage that process for you. The major obstetrician can't manage it as much as an hand-holding person, a professional, will do it for you. You know, that's one part. Another thing that I wrote is, yes, hand-holding. You know that she has support, and then, yes, and then until the country is mature enough to handle surrogacy, and then until they can give enough information, they can take in the information. For now, because it's not into law, nobody really knows about it. Everybody's still doing it to their corners.
Yeah.
Once it's put into law, everybody's aware, then people can do it properly, and they can do it when it's regulated, and whoever breaks the law will be punished in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I think combined with what Chidima said, I think if whoever is going to do surrogacy, just take those points down. Also thinking about empowering the surrogate after.
Yep.
You see, these little things that you do, they never forget.
Mm.
No, they never forget.
Mm.
Eventually, to be honest, the child that comes out will definitely look for the biological mother. It's just a matter of time.
Mm.
It's really just a matter of time, because the world is collapsing together. People are looking for information. People are looking for their descent. Megan looked for came to Nigeria to trace her descent, let alone a birth mother that has records. They will look for them. And you don't want someone to speak bitterness back to that child.
Mm.
To say, oh no, your people didn't look after me. She would almost have a sweet experience to say, oh, they really looked after me. They really did. They really. And it never leaves a woman. It never leaves the heart of a person, whoever is being kind to you. You're thirsty, someone gives you water to drink. You will never forget the person.
Someone that stood with
you.
Yeah.
Exactly. Someone that stood with you mopping your face while you are in labor. You will never forget that fellow. Or someone that explained to you what you expect after delivery and walked you through the journey of pregnancy and made sure you were fine. You will never forget such a person. You know, so these are the little things that really go a very long way. Ensuring that you, the commissioning couple, the baby, is being brought into the world, and the baby has a good landing. It's eventually for the child that is unborn. And in the long run, if you look at it in the grand scheme of things. So it's good to do things right. You know, put yourself in their shoes. And never be transactional.
Yeah.
No, don't never be transactional about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Those are really great points, both of you. I really, really thank you for those responses. And you're so right, Bisolami. The attitude also counts, because the way, if you position yourself on a transactional level, it's going to show in how you talk about the surrogates. And yeah, if you're already pursuing surrogates, again, you have surrogates in Nigeria, you have the means. The extra things don't cost, right? They don't cost a lot. Trust me, they don't cost a lot.
but it's a thoughtfulness. I know that one surrogate's need might differ from the other person, but you have to have a relationship. It doesn't have to be direct. Again, go through a third party like we did with Chidema. So, you know, go into that. I have just a couple of questions for Aranda, but I wanted to talk to Tyra a little bit about the anxiety. And maybe I can even have Chidema and Busola me chime into it. So I was super anxious throughout the whole process. I won't lie to you. And I know, okay, Busola me knew because she would call me. She'd be like, I've been thinking about you. How are you doing? And I appreciate this call, Busola. Thank you for always checking in on me. It was wanting to set up the group and, you know, plan everything and all that, but she was also checking on me to see how I was doing and, okay, what's going on in your head? After you've gone through many years of, you know, trying to get pregnant and not being successful with it, and then you're like, okay, let me just try surrogacy. You tried it the first time. The surrogate was pregnant and then they lost it. And it's like, oh my gosh, what is going on? Am I the common factor here? I don't lie to you. Every time I wake up and I'll see 50 messages, I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? And I'll read through it to the right. And I'm like, okay, it's good news. The days of the antenatal visits, I will always wait for like a report. And sometimes she didn't mind maybe on her way home. She'll go get the surrogate. They'll go to the clinic together. So she waits until she gets some before she can get the report from the hospital. So there are delays. And I don't see anything. I was like, Chidema, is everything okay? She's like, yeah, it's fine. We're just, you know, I'm running late, you know, I'll send you a report, but everything went well. So it was just moments like that. Tao, how did you handle those anxieties? Especially for, you know, men in your situation. What are some of the tips you can provide, you know, them and how they can support their wives throughout this process?
Well, one thing I'll just say is that you really played it cool. Like you didn't really show me that you were anxious. Yeah, but I think, yeah, it's tough, really. I'm not sure if there's any solution. I mean, I was anxious, you know, but, you know, when we, you know, got the news of the positive pregnancy test, right, we were happy, but then, you know, cautiously optimistic that, okay, everything will go well, you know, and as the days turn to weeks and to months and with the reports, you know, the anxiety just kept getting worse and worse, you know, and we tried to talk about it sometimes. I remember even telling you about, you know, me having
a dream.
You know,
yeah.
Was it a dream?
Yeah.
Talking about a congenital defect or something.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm like, you know. And then even up to delivery, you were telling me that, don't worry, all the organs will come out complete. You know, I think just talking to your partner about it. And another thing that we did was, you know, we prayed together. You know, we prayed together and we made, you know, positive declarations about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think just talking about it and just trusting God and talking to your partner and,
yeah,
you know, that helps.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
thanks. And we also, I mean, we prayed and we still pray for our surrogates, right? She's forever embedded in our family's history. Like, we can't forget her. And even though I hate to put it this way, but that's just the transaction part is over as far as the baby and all that. But we're still in communication with her through Chidema, checking on her. And again, she's forever going to be part of our story, whatever that might end up looking like in the future. For Chidema and Busola, I mean, for commissioning parents who might be going through this, what are some of the tips you can provide to them? Because I know people just think that, well, try this, try adoption, try surrogacy. And the reason I talked about the loss we had, which I've had losses, you know, personally, but the one from the surrogate, it broke me down so badly. I didn't even think that I've ever been, you know, that depressed in my life when it happened. It almost brought back, almost like with traumatization, and then thinking about what the surrogate had to go through, because it had been far along in pregnancy. They had to go through DNC, you know, to get rid of a pregnancy. It was going to be like another surgery. And I imagine just the trauma was going to be on her. So I had to write her a letter to let her know, hey, you know, this gift you tried giving us, even though it didn't work out, I'll forever honor you. We thank you so much for this. I don't blame you. Because people were saying, what if she had done something? I was like, I would never walk in that kind of consciousness that this surrogate did something to hurt the babies, because it's not even in her best interest. for that agency, they would never want to use her again because it wasn't successful. And this was where she was getting her small meal tickets. Why would I want to be thinking that someone was trying to kill the baby? So I wasn't even thinking in that line at all. I had to be very clear that we don't blame you. We actually, you know, we're so sorry this happened to you. We wish you a great recovery and all that. And, you know, prayed for her and that was it. But I'm just curious to know what additional tips you might want to provide to commissioning parents. And I know we're talking about commissioning parents. These are parents who are the ones that'll get the baby. That's what we mean by commissioning parents. Sorry that we didn't define the terminologies. But for commissioning parents, Bisolami and Chidima, what kind of advice should they give them in managing their expectations, especially anxieties that surround the surrogacy?
For commissioning couples trying to manage their anxiety, the truth of the matter, the anxiety is real. Two doctors just mentioned, you really have to work with your partner a lot because, I mean, that's who you have. That's just it. You can't do this journey alone at all. You really can't walk this journey alone. So you really have to talk to your partner. Talk about everything. You know, the anxieties are real. Even in regular normal pregnancy, like your partner is pregnant right beside you, the men are really anxious that something will just go wrong. So there's a lot of talking that will be involved. And you know, for a couple who, you know, they may be going through even some marital issues, it's good to speak to a counselor because you do not want to bring in a child into the world and the home is not ready. It's not advisable. You really have to be prepared and ensure things are in place, that you're ready to receive the bundle of joy that God is giving you. Right. So I would think that talking to your partner working together is the key to everything. Making sure that you both are in sync with what is happening. You are conscious that you're not just going to have a baby, like a baby for the world to see and for you to prove a point. You're going to have to raise a child, which is a responsibility. You are going to have to nurture a child, which is a responsibility. So you have to have that big picture in mind. Not just going to have, I mean, people just have a baby or have a baby. And you just having a human being counted as part of statistics. No. You want to have a human being who is whole and you're looking at this human being making a change in the world. So it's a longer picture. You know, so you have to prepare the foundations. You have to ensure that you are ready to nurture. You are ready to raise. You're ready to groom. You're ready to really, really nurture a child. And you must be prepared for that. You know, so yeah, that's all I would say. I'm added to what I had said before. Thank you.
Thank you so much. How about you, Chidima?
Yeah, I must say that the entire process is a journey of faith. And in telling couples, commissioning parents should trust the entire process. Like Musala has rightly said, you both have each other, right? So going through the process together better prepares you for receiving the child. The welfare of the child depends on it. So you both have to be ready for the entire process. And having gone through the journey together, supporting each other, you know, it has a way of better preparing you for even the outcome of having the baby. You know, when you have the baby, you have better reception because you've been through this process together, and you've shared some wonderful bonding during the process. So I think that would also help the baby because you have better prepared parents having the baby. You know, so yeah, basically that's what it is. And then trust the process. That's why we want people to get trusted practitioners to handle the entire process. You know, people that you can actually talk to and can actually walk through the process with you. People that at least to a very large extent will give you peace of mind, you know, while going through the process. Yeah. Yes. And when you have any issues, people that you can actually talk to and they could help with that. I think that would really help the couple. So you have people that you can relate with, relate your fears with. And trust me, these things happen and people understand, just as it is with any major project. You know, you want to have the right people around you. So that's really will help. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Some random questions I had was for parents who might be trying to choose a hospital to work with in Nigeria. And I love the clinic we use because they offer that whole 360 degree services, like the legal services, surrogate services. If you want to do donor eggs or donor sperm, whatever your situation might be, they curate those services based on your needs, and they're very communicative too. That's why I chose them. But I'm curious to know from your experiences. So starting with Tito, what made you go with the particular clinic we went with? And then for Bosolami and Chidima, for commissioning parents, would be commissioning parents, given that we've talked about how to empower surrogates to make sure that they're not being exploited, what should they be looking for in clinics that might be providing the services to them? With the clinic that you ended up going with, what stood out to you?
I think, you know, most good practices, right, you know, tend to go from, or tend to get clients from word of mouth, right? So I think highly recommended by, I'm not sure, was it Bosolami? I don't remember who. Yeah, so I came highly recommended. You know, I got to meet Dr. Bu, got to know his kind of person, that he really is someone that genuinely cares and everything. So, and then, you know, seeing how each step of the way they carried us along, he was professional and all that, even with the loss and everything, you know, he took his time to, you know, meet with us and all that. So I think that was the main thing, you know, seeing the setup of the clinic and, you know, how they came highly recommended and had people have good outcomes, you know, from their clinic was it for me.
Thank you. Chidima, what should commissioning parents be looking out for when they choose would be hospitals or clinics to work through for their surrogacy?
Okay, for me, I would say that, like Taiwo actually said, most clinics get their recommendations and their referrals from word of mouth. So I think the commissioning parents will want to ask the right questions. You want to ask the questions, and I think people should take out time to actually do their research, do their findings, meet with people, meet with the people involved, the practitioners involved, you know, have meetings in the clinic. You want to talk to people, ask questions as much as possible. Do not just look at, don't just be too desperate or in haste, you know, because these are people that you're going to be working with for a very long time. I don't know any surrogacy process that ends in a couple of weeks, right? It's something that you have to go through sometimes even more than a year, you know, having to before you actually actualize your dream, you know, of increasing your family. So you want to ask the right questions. You want to make sure that you're talking to the right people, you know, and I think spell out your fears. Talk as much as possible. If there are not people you can talk to freely that would listen to you, I don't think they're people you should be working with in the first place. You know, make sure that nothing is swept under the carpet. You want to make them understand that this is what you want. And if you're paying so much, I think you can as well do your due diligence and make sure that there are people that can give you what you want. And of course, there should be people that would that you can actually be part of the entire process with, people that give you information with every step, people that you can actually work with. You know, they're not making you feel like you're doing too much, because of course, bringing a child into this world is not a joke. And if you want to be part of the process, you should want to be part of the process. You know, there are not people making you feel, oh, you're doing too much. No, they're there to support you to achieve your dream, and support they should do. So if you do not get a clinic that can do all this, trust me, they're out there. They're very good clinics that can walk you through this. If you're not getting that, then I don't think that you should even venture into that kind of partnership with the clinic. So talk to the right people, ask the right questions, yes, as much as possible. I think this will help.
Thank you so much. And you have anything to add to that, Basan?
The only thing I'll just add is, like Chidima just said, ask the right questions. I would say ask all the questions. For example, ask what kind of hospital do they use for their deliveries? Who are their doctors? check them out, be as thorough as possible, and ask them at what point can you opt out? Like, can you move if you're not happy with that services? Why I'm saying that is because not all of the fertility clinics know how to transition from fertility to obstetric. So they may have very fantastic fertility service, but when it gets obstetrics, the communication is broken down. And that breaks your trust, you know? So how are they able to do that? Some hospitals have all of the facility, but I can bet your process from end to end will not be 100%. You see, that's 70%, that's 60%. That's what you should focus on and put support in place, you know, how they're going to do it. I mean, you had that experience and I was really upset about that because I knew that usually happens in most things. So they are not able to transition properly. And that's where the nurse comes in. The doctor isn't going to do that. The doctor is not... doesn't have competence in that, to be honest. They don't communicate that much. They don't tell you the clinical information and they walk away. Really, that's their job. But the nurse is the one that does the in-between, that makes sure that communication is fine. But they do not, some of them do not invest in that. They do not make sure that that area is tight. And that's the question you must ask, you know. And find out from them if you can do your own part. That means that once the surrogate is pregnant, can you take your surrogate out somewhere else? You know, what's also the provisions of the agencies? What at the agency that you use? What are they doing? Like, what are their responsibilities? It should be very, very crystal clear. The legal documents should be clear. Everyone should understand their roles and their responsibilities. Nothing should be ambiguous, and nobody should be uncomfortable or not sure or do not know what it is their roles are. You know, so just asking the right questions, like Chidima mentioned, and knowing the process from end to end. But really, when you're coming from a commissioning parent point of view, you may not know all the processes. You need someone to let you know the process, so that you can really ask the most important questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I mean, you raise a very important, both of you raise important points, and I just want to tease that out. Like, that is very key. Knowing the process for transition from fertility to obstetrics, we learned the very hard way. Everything went well with the fertility part, but at the particular point, there was a miscan, and we suspected that during that time was when there was a pregnancy loss, but the surrogate couldn't get scanned because the doctor was maybe busy or so, and they sent her home and they didn't call her back in time. And by the time she went for the next scan, it was like, oh, we don't feel a heartbeat. And so within that time period, there was nothing done. And that cost us it was a costly mistake. You know. So again, you don't want to do that. Make sure you're asking about the transitional process, the level of communication. And we had to have a conversation about we ended up in the same clinic. And it ended up being that because they knew that they had made a mistake, they were not going to try that again with us. And we had a lot of safeguards in place, you know, with Chidima and communication. And so it went a lot better. And I think they also used that to improve their communication process. So we did help inform the practices in the clinic. All to say, don't use our experience. Like, learn from us so you don't pay costly for it. This is a mistake that shouldn't have happened in the first place. It was totally unavoidable. Now, as a round off, I want to just come back to that question from the beginning. How do we provide support to surrogates? Because again, these are the people that are making this magic happen, right? Because if we could do it ourselves, we wouldn't need surrogates, right? And it's funny, Busola mentioned Sarah's and Haggai's story, which is the Bible verse I actually read yesterday. And I realized that, oh my God, Sarah, you know, although God didn't even try that, was even telling Abraham, like, listen to your wife, your family line will come through Isaac and all that. But all that to say, do not be mean to your surrogates, okay? So based on the conversations we had from Chidima's point of view and also Busalami's point of view, I'd like to just summarize some of the things that they talked about. Is, you know, making sure that one, we are, the way we talk about our surrogates, you know, we're very, very respectful. We look at them as people who are on board with us, like our partners, not like our employees. It's not the omodo model. Even though that sadly was obtainable right now, we can't, you know, let that be where we are doing it. And another way to also help them is educating them, right? Making sure that we are asking questions. So again, getting the service of a third party to serve as a liaison between you and the surrogates, and educating them what's going on. You know, what do you plan using your money for at the end of the day? What's your plan, your transition plan? Do you have a business plan? How do you, because most surrogates tend to be people that have had kids before. They actually want you to have had a child before. So they might have their own family. How are you making sure that your family don't see you, you know, high and dry, right? And then advocating for laws, right? This is something that we can't do at this level, but hopefully the point of doing this podcast is to shed light in this dark area. And I know Nigeria is going to become a mecca soon for surrogates because of just how cost-friendly it is. But we hope that as the laws are being enacted, that are still protecting the rights, like fair compensation, so that the surrogates are receiving majority of the fees paid, right? Providing them healthcare access, you know, guaranteeing those comprehensive medical care throughout the pregnancy and postpartum care. We go have, you know, premium drugs to be on during the pregnancy and after the pregnancy. Again, we talked about therapy, checking on her, helping her put together a business plan that can help, you know, with financial liberation after the surrogacy is done. And then community support. These are ways surrogates can even help one another. I would love for a day to come where surrogates feel more empowered, because you guys, you don't know the amount of strength and the amount of power that lies in you guys. You're the ones really making a dream happen. That they can form their own network and dictate what they want and how they want to be paid. Again, because there's no amount of money, like, you know, Bisola already said that you can be paid for this, but at least fair compensation for the work that goes into this. I don't know if I missed anything from what all of you have said so far. And of course, you know, praying for your surrogates, praying for them, and staying connected as best as you can through your third party, of course. And choosing the right partners, you know, partner with ethical clinics, agencies, and professionals. Our doctor actually reached out to us and said, you guys might want to consider, this was the first time we did surrogates, you might want to consider, and before we met Chidima and used Chidima services, you might want to consider paying the surrogate extra amount of money. You can send it through our partners and they will make sure that she's getting like extra allowance for foods, and they won't pay her, but they will just shop for her and bring the, you know, groceries to her. So we did that the first time around, right? And and then make sure your legal paperwork are tied. In the next episode that I will cover on this, we'll talk about, you know, for those who might be abroad and wanting to bring the kids abroad, that hasn't been talked about ever on the podcast. So you'll be hearing it for the first time. What does it entail to have your child cross over to you? And I will bring in someone who has gone through that process twice. And this will be particular to the US because different countries have different laws. But, you know, the modalities are still similar across board, you know, especially for foreign citizens. Like, how do you bring your child from Nigeria to your country of stay, and the paperwork that entails, what to consider, and the preparations, how do you ensure appropriate documentation through the process, and all that. We can explore that more in other episodes, but this episode was really just to talk about the change makers, the people who have, you know, changed their life. And I'm going to pause there a little bit to just, you know, give them time to kind of wrap up their thoughts, and if there's anything I missed in mine summary, they can fill it in, so I can just let them go, because we've had more than an hour of conversation and it's quite late here. So I like to excuse them after such a long day. So starting with Bisola, any wrapping up thoughts and maybe some additional points you'd like to call before we come to a close?
Yeah, thank you so much, Mo, for having me and Chidima. So I'll just say, the only thing I can just say is, this service is available. If that's what you're happy, what you want to do, please go for it and do it, but do it the right way. We are here to help you, I will say. We are here to help you, really. I think I'll say I can help, you know, as well as Chidima is available as well, you know, but when we're just going to get things right, we're going to put things in the right place, ensure that everyone is happy at the end of the day, you know, and then you are positioned right as well. And at the end of the whole process, you know, you have a baby to yourself by God who gives children. And then the parties involved have a good taste in their mouth at the end of the day. And then just to say that we're very much open to helping people walk through that journey. Thank you also, Mo, for having this. This is really good. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Chidima, how about you? Thanks a lot, Bisola.
I think Bisola has said everything, but I'm happy that we could have this conversation. And like you said, apart from Nancy, I don't think anybody has come out to have this discussion. And I know so many people that are frown at it, but it's okay. Whether we like it or not, it's something that has to be talked about, because whether you like it or not, surrogacy has come to stay. But like Busola said, we are happy to help. You know, it's what we do. We're happy to help. Then I must really applaud you because I also understand that it is because you want to help people. You're not just talking about your process because you want to enlighten people. You want to enlighten people and you want people to take the best route that is less traumatic to achieving their dreams. So I really must applaud what you are doing. And thank you for being very vulnerable and being open to having this conversation. Yeah. Thank you, Mo. Thank you so much.
Thank you both so much. Last but not least, T-Dog.
Yeah, I'm driving right now, but what I'll just say is thank you for making this happen. It was very, very informative. And I agree with Chidima, you know. I say that to myself too, as well as you, you know, for being vulnerable. And thank you, Chidima and Busolami, for helping make our dream a reality. And what I'll just say to partners or couples out there is, just continue to have ongoing conversations with your partner. You know, talk about your weaknesses, talk about your fears, your anxiety. You know, pray about it. You know, two is better than one. So, yeah, that's all I'll have to say. And thanks for having me, as usual. T-Dog.
All right.
Thank you. And just to add to everything, it'll be for commissioning parents, you have to also prepare yourself emotionally. Especially for the moms. I'm speaking to the moms here. My path to motherhood has been very interesting. It wasn't how I ever planned it, but I'm thankful that this is the path, you know, that was chosen for me. That said, because a lot of what's going on is outside of your body, but you still feel it because you're involved in it. Prepare yourself emotionally. There's a disconnection that comes with surrogacy where you're not the one carrying the pregnancy. So by virtue of that, you're physiologically removed from it. But it's an emotional and spiritual connection that you still have to maintain. So having your body catch up with your brain and mind is very, very important. And I know we didn't talk about that. Maybe that will be a separate episode on things I had to do. On a visceral level, I had to download the Baby Center app to track, you know, the growth of the baby. What does it mean? I know Nancy in her own episode talked about having to do breastfeeding. I didn't go through that because I just wasn't, I didn't want to do that, plain and simple. But that's something you have to do. There's a preparation that goes, you know, into that. But nothing really supersedes the importance of planning for parenthood. Use that waiting period to prepare for your baby's arrival. And if you're like me, where if you don't see something tangible, it's not real to you. I just went into client mode. Like, even when I was shopping and preparing, you know, for the room and buying stuff, it was hard for me to relate that this was for a child that I was doing, my child I was doing it for, because it's like, where's the child? Like, so, and the anxiety surrounding what if something happens. In fact, it took a while for a lot of my friends to know. It wasn't until like a month. Some of our family members didn't know until like weeks before. And it wasn't because we thought they were witches and wizards. It was just more managing emotional pain, considering that we had a colossal loss just some months before then. So having to like work up that courage, you know, it took a while to like talk about, you know, impending baby and all that. But again, setting up the nursery, the resources, your bonding plans, like how do you plan bonding with the baby? These are things you have to consider. And if the surrogacy journey takes you to another country, like in my case, we're based in the US, but we have to come to Nigeria. Having to take time off work. I was in Nigeria for 2 months. So all of you thinking I relocated to Nigeria. No, not yet. You have to plan logistics, you know, for travel, for visa arrangements, you know, packing clothes, food, diapers. I also have a 5-year-old, you know, making arrangements for her school. So there's no gap in her education. Preparing her for it. You know, we're having a baby. And she's like, Mommy, where's the baby? And I'm like, no, baby is not here. So there's so many layers to this that we didn't cover in this episode, but I'm just throwing it out there that there are so many, many layers that you have to consider. And be patient. It's a complex process. You have to be patient. God, the way God worked on my heart this time around, like, I've learned to be, like, the faith I had to have for someone that is so visual and, you know, like, I like things that are tangible, things I can control, like my friend would say, it was hard. It was a lesson in trust and faith. So trust that every, you know, step is taking you to that goal, and you have to be positive. I had so many dreams that were not very positive, but again, stay positive and don't let the devil, like, you know, fill your heart with anxiety. And I'll just conclude by saying that whatever you got from prayers, you have to sustain with prayers. So as you're praying for that pregnancy, also pray as babies here, pray for everybody. And surrogacy is a profound journey. It's exchanged my life. And it's a gift I would like to extend to anybody. It's not for everybody, but for those who might be wanting to consider this, I just thought to make this episode to be very candid about just some of the hopes and joys you can bring to your family. But it also requires preparation, empathy, and trust. Educate yourself. Build those strong partnerships. It's why we brought you the man, Bisola, in here. Support your surrogate ethically. Remember, the heart of this journey is incredible gift of life. You made that possible through collaboration and compassion. Let that be the gift you're giving your surrogates. This is how we can change the narrative of surrogacy in Nigeria. And then if you want to find out more about Chidima services or even Bosola, where can they find both of you? And I'll wrap up with that.
So we don't have a proper Instagram or LinkedIn, but we're on LinkedIn. Yeah, so very soon, I think we'll set up our Instagram. And LinkedIn status. I think we just start from there. But basically, we just want to gather much enough reviews because that's what people are going to buy, what people are going to look out for as much as possible. And also know that people don't want to talk about it publicly yet. They're not that mature enough. So it's not something that's still going to be as you can handle, right? So, but my personal Instagram, I think you have the link, so you can share that with everyone. And my link is Bosola Mystics. I think that's Bosola Me, yeah, I think so. I'll share my LinkedIn.
You want to share an email as well?
Yeah, I'll share my LinkedIn with you. My email as well is olubusolajeremiahyusuf@gmail.com.
Okay, we'll put all of that in the show notes.
Yeah, thank you. Put my email, my Instagram, and my LinkedIn, which I'll send to you.
Okay, no worries. Thank you so much. How about you, Chidima?
Okay, I think I'll drop my handles. I can also be reached on email, victoriaelmebrado@gmail.com. I would have that sent in so that you can also put that there. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you all. And thank you all so much for joining us on this episode of the Muscle Podcast. If you're considering surrogacy, you're already on this journey, know that you're not alone. However, we can help you, just reach out. And this is why I decided to share the story. So this is a big reveal I've been hiding for a while. I'm still in my, you know, post-processing moment, but it's been joy all around. And I can't wait to share more about our son. It was a boy. So, yeah, he's very, he's just been a gift. And we're just spending this time to adjust to our new normal of being a family of four. But you hear more about him and also about Arife, how she's been as a big sister. But so far, so good. And we thank God for that. Until next time, stay curious and stay connected. This has been your host, Mo, on the Mossable Podcast. Have a great day, guys. I love you. Bye, everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.